Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome once again. People, you know what time it is. 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that time it always happens, the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT, a.k.a. The Master, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the man from Jersey like myself, Jeff the Joker. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Jeff and me. And that's on the FantasySportsCasino.com hotline. And as always, this show is also sponsored by the FantasySportsCasino.com hotline, where winners win and players play. We got a great show in store for you tonight. Well, expecting a guest to roll up here. Daryl Too Sweet Cooley happens to be of in the sports of boxing, and hopefully he'll stop by and give his interest, knowledge of boxing. But without further ado, you got tired of hearing, listening to me. Let's bring in my esteemed co-host, like I said, from Jersey, just like myself, Jeff the Joker. Talk to me, my man. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Jerry, I'm good. How about you?
All right. You sound like you're on the road. Am I right about that?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. That's no problem. All right, Jeff. You know, there's a lot of things been going on. We talked about it last week when DeSean Jackson got released. And we were talking about...
Excuse me. I think that happened right after the show.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about it. It was like inevitable that was going to happen, and it did happen after our show, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, we talked about it on Saturday. I talked about it again on Sunday, and yesterday. I think he officially signed it today, but yesterday they had come to an agreement. They, meaning the Washington Redskins, one of the ones that are still in the NFC East. Now, we've been down this road before, but not exactly like this. An Eagle going to the Redskins. Now, it was the quarterback before, and pretty much the quarterback, well, you saw it, his career was basically over, and he had, for all intents and purposes, spent his load. But this guy is 27 years old, had the best career, season of his career last year, is a wide receiver that can take the top off of defense, and a big play wide receiver at that. Going to a quarterback that needs to be redemptive, needs to have a good showing this week, I mean this season. Excuse me, along with the Pierre Garçon and the soon-to-be second-year guy in Jordan Reed, along with Andre Roberts, who they acquired already, and the wily veteran Santana Moss. Jeff, DeSean Jackson just moves down 95 to the Washington Redskins, stays in the NFC East, and has to see the Philadelphia Eagles two times a year and wreak havoc on Chip Kelly. All that I just unloaded on you, Give me your thoughts.
You know, you think the Eagles could have found a way to trade him somewhere to get him out of their division? Because unless you're the Eagles, when teams get rid of a guy, they want him outside of the division. And, I mean, they probably wouldn't have gotten much for Jackson, but at least they wouldn't be facing him two times a year. And going back to McNabb, that was a trade, which is very surprising that a player,
right,
especially a quarterback, got traded within his own division. There was a number on that, that hadn't happened in at least a decade. I mean, okay, DeSean Jackson, you know, he could be a little immature at times, but he still got the talent. And, I mean, I'm not for gangs or anything, but for gang association, you could probably get rid of a lot of NFL players if that was against the rules, you know?
Yeah. Well, you have to think that. Give me your thoughts about him being able to go in there and facing the Eagles. And you think he's going to have a huge chip on his shoulder. The kid plays with a chip on his shoulder. I don't know how much bigger it can get.
Yeah.
And then going up against the Eagles, that's going to be major problems for the Eagles for years to come, because this kid's 27 years old. It's not like he's over the hill.
Right. I mean, in the NFL, sometimes they make too big a deal of it. You know, guys play former teams or former teammates all the time. But this is a guy who got released in his prime, and he is a guy who plays with the chip on his shoulder. That's not a knock on him. I mean, DeSean Jackson wants to light it up every game, I think. But he's going to have a little extra. But, you know, the thing, usually it's a wash because he knows them, but they know him. You know, I'm curious what kind of reception he's going to get from the fans in Philly. You know, but these kind of things happen all the time. Not quite as big, but and usually guys will downplay it. DeSean Jackson's the kind of guy, he'll probably be talking about it all week. And my only complaint about him as a player is when he was having contract problems with the Eagles, you know, and I don't hold it against these guys for trying to get as much money as they can, but I think it affected his performance on the field, and that's what you don't want. You know, and he really did seem that way. When he was unhappy about his contract, it spilled over onto the playing field, and that's not cool. And I think the Redskins got him at somewhat of a bargain. So if he has a big year, then he'll be looking for more money again.
Yep. Well, check this one out also. You know what number DeSean Jackson wears?
Yep.
And what number does a special person on the Redskins wear?
Yep. I heard Jackson's going to use number 11. Because the thing is also, now, there is a certain protocol on that a guy will change the number, but the new guy has to make it worth his while. But the thing is,
yes,
RG3 is a big star. There's a lot of kids walking around with his number 10 jerseys. So I don't think he's going to give up the number. But usually, you know, when Plaxico Burress came to the Giants, he really liked the number 17. The punter had that number. He wasn't really attached to it. And you know, gave him a nice gift. I think it was a vacation, like a vacation to Hawaii for his whole family, or something that would, you know, even be impressive for a football player. And he very politely, you know, gave him the number. But usually you got to make somebody an offer. But, you know, I think because of RG's status and there's so many of his jerseys, I think the league wouldn't want him to change the number, you know, because they're still going to make so much money off the merchandise. But then again, if I can't imagine it, if RG3 signed his number, maybe people would start buying the new jerseys. I wouldn't. I would be pretty ticked off if I was one of those fans.
Well, how about this one? If you're a Jet fan and you happen to be a Jeff Cumberland fan who happens to wear number 87, Well, that number 87 is going to have a different name over top of it by the price of $25,000. Eric Decker paid Jeff Cumberland $25,000 for the number 87. Thoughts on that? And a state senator.
You know, that sounds like a very generous offer. And, you know, I guess Decker must really like that number. And Cumberland, hey, it's money in his pocket. And, you know, a way to say, hey, you know, I'm going to give this number to my new teammate, you know. You know, Decker could afford it. And some of these guys, and I've read about this, are very attached to their numbers. And some guys, you know, some of these guys, it's the same number since Pee Wee League. And some of them, it really doesn't matter to. I think it was Dwayne Bowe. He had his number tattooed. I think it was Dwayne Bowe. He had his, when he was in college, he had his number tattooed on his arm. And then he couldn't even get that number in the pros.
Man, right.
He should have made a really big offer so that he, this way, at least the number would match his tattoo. Or maybe he had the tattoo fixed.
Hey, what can you do, man? What can you do?
Yeah.
Another guy that it seems like he's going to be changing teams also, and it's going to happen, supposedly happens in the near future, the clock continues to tick on Chris Johnson's tenure with the Tennessee Titans. The long-presumed divorce is coming. The running back's agent said he doesn't know when. But Joel Siegel, who happens to be Johnson's agent, said, I quote, I think it's a matter of time before Chris won't be with the Titans. Now, they tried to trade him, and you know, this is a problem. This is you know, all these guys that work in the front office of all these NFL teams get paid big bucks, but they do some of the stupidest things, or they let the word get out, whatever way. It could be the team that they're contacting puts the word out there and to lower the price on the player. What I'm talking about is they've tried to trade Chris Johnson, and like a lot of other guys, quite naturally, why trade him when you know that the team is going to release him, and then you can get him at a cheaper price, or a price that you want to get him at, not a price that his salary for this year is supposed to be $8 million, and $8 million for next year, and $7 million in 2016. So, quite naturally, anybody who's trading for a running back who's at 29, approaching that magic age of 30, are not going to pay $8 million this year, $8 million next year, and $7 million in 2016. And quite naturally, Chris Johnson said he won't take less money. Well, if they release him and he still wants to play and he still wants to make some money, you know what's going to happen. He's going to be taking a pay cut, just like MJD did, just like Darren McFadden did. And and the price of running backs, if you see the free agent running backs, who happened to be Ben Tate, who was supposedly the top, at the time, the top free agent running back, he took a very small salary for playing for the Cleveland Browns. What do you think about that, Jeff? What do you think of Chris Johnson, $8 million for the next 2 years and $7 million in 2016, says he wants to take a pay cut, getting released from the Titans, and they're going to be doing a running back by committee with Sean Green, Dexter McCluster, and probably whoever they draft in May. Talk to me.
You know, the thing is, because so many of these running backs by committee, which, you know, anybody who plays fantasy knows all about that.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, these running backs don't get the big bucks like they used to, so it really hurts their value. To me, Chris Johnson, I mean, he might be approaching 30. but I don't think he has a lot of carries, considering, because most of the time, you know, he was sharing carries with Lendale White or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Some of his kind of talent is worth taking a chance on, because he's not just an average player. I mean, if he works out well, if he's in good shape, which I assume he is, that's never been an issue for him. You know, if he's in good shape and he's still got that incredible speed, one of the fastest running backs I've ever seen, I think somebody, you know, should take a chance on him, because, you know, he's that good. But, I mean, he had the one big year, and what he's saying afterwards, you know, he wanted to get 2,500 yards or whatever, and he hasn't been the same since then. But when he's right, though, he is outstanding. But I guess, I don't know, you know, this is just part of the off-season drama.
Yep. And speaking of off-season drama, we talked about Johnny Manziel and him coming out and his pad and helmets last week. And depending on what side of the fence you fall on, he was, I wouldn't say praised, but I've seen some talk of analysts on TV that echoed what I was talking about, that he, in fact, all of quarterbacks, I've seen analysts echo the fact that I don't think any of these quarterbacks are first-round talents, and that you can find decent talents in the second and third round, and some of these guys may fall, and some of them may not. You have Johnny Manziel come out playing great. The former First Lady and President with their dogs are there. And he comes out in, like I said, full pads. Not full pads. Shoulder pads, black jacket, and helmet. Playing with the music of Drake. And then we flip the script on a guy that I'm really falling with a big, huge man crush on. And I hope my Houston Texans utter the same words that I've been uttering. With the first pick, the Houston Texans take in the 2014 draft, defensive lineman from the University of Southern California, Jadeveon Clowney. He had his pro day, and I watched a replay because I really wanted to see what he looked like and how he moved. And it was very unscripted, quite naturally, because the defensive linemen, so they have representatives from 30 of the 32 teams. The Titans and the Browns weren't there. And they had D-line coaches, actual D-line coaches, taking them to drills that were unscripted. So he had no idea what kind of drills they were going to take him to and to what length, along with a couple of his D-line teammates. He did extremely well, and it was, quite naturally, it's a lot of media that was there. But it's nowhere close to the media hype, either self-inflicted or scripted, as Johnny Manziel. And he was outstanding in all his drills, and came in at the same weight he played in college, came in at the same weight he went to the combine, he came in at the same weight he was at his pro day, meaning that his worth ethic, that, in my opinion, was questioned, shouldn't be questioned, because he's been very consistent on all stages. And give me your thoughts. I don't know if you heard about it or talked about it or whatever.
The thing is, of course he looks good at a pro day. Nobody's ever questioned his athletic ability. But there are other questions. He takes plays off. I think last year he even took games off. And, you know, I see him being successful maybe, you know, playing defensive end in a 4-3. But a lot of teams now run the 3-4. Then they have to move him over to linebacker. And not everybody thrives with that position switch. And the thing is, as high as he's going to be drafted, you're going to draft a guy that high. You want a guy who's got a real motor, who never takes a play off. And I hate to say it, I don't think that's Clowney.
Oh, really? Okay, well, let me say this also, that after he did the D-line drills, he went and did linebacker drills too. Because Romeo Crennel's defense is 3-4. But they interviewed Bill O'Brien, who happens to be the head coach of Houston Texans, and said that their base is 3-4, but that doesn't mean that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be playing 3-4. Just like a lot of other teams don't just exclusively play a base defense of a 3-4 or a 4-3. And he also said that he will be moving him around. So he may play defensive lineman. Now, this is his thoughts if he was to draft him. Quite naturally, he didn't commit himself. But he said if he was to be on the Texans, he would be moving him around in either a 3-4 or a 4-3 alignment, depending, and then using him in coverage as a 3-4 linebacker or a 4-3 defensive lineman. So, and his thoughts were, and I strongly believe this guy is versatile enough and athletic enough to play in the 4-3 and the 3-4 and be able to cover somebody in space. Now, he's not a DB. He's not a safety that has skills that he, but I think he can be effective in being able to switch back and forth. And with the guys in the locker room, J.J. Watt, for instance, and Brian Cushing for another, on the defensive side I'm talking about, there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to keep this guy and show him the way to better himself. Plus the fact this guy wants to be an HOF. He wants to be remembered like that. So I think that motor is not really in question, in my opinion, but I understand your concern. I understand what you're saying. You got any thoughts on what I just pushed out there?
You know, to me, I know guys have made the switch, but a lot of guys struggle with it. I mean, who's that guy who the Jets drafted very high? Vernon Goldstein? Right,
Vernon Goldstein.
He did.
I hated that pick from the beginning.
And my thing is, I know some guys change position for the NFL, but in the first round, to me, I don't want a guy you have to change position. I want a sure thing, as sure as you can get, because there's no such thing as a sure thing.
Right.
And that early changing position scares me. And the teams that consistently draft well, they evaluate players based on how they fit into their system. I mean, the Giants, and I'm glad they are, they're a 4-3 team. They draft guys who fit into the 4-3 concept, you know. They drafted some pretty good pass rushers in recent years. That's what they do, you know. Two more teams, the Colts, the Patriots, they draft guys who fit into their system. And let's say some teams, the Patriots run a 3-4 with a lot of variety. But who knows? Maybe a guy like Clowney, a 4-3 defensive end, wouldn't be on their board because that's how they do it. You know, that's how, you know, and it works pretty well for some of those teams.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. I still think this is the way to go, but who am I? I'm just someone who's a fan and looking for my team to do much better. I don't know if we talked about this last week. Maybe we did. I don't think we did. About the passing of Ralph Wilson of the Buffalo Bills, the owner who passed away. I know you heard about and I don't know where it came from, but there was talk like in the last couple of days that of getting Donald Trump to buy the Buffalo Bills. Before I go any further, your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I think we did talk about Ralph Wilson last week. Thing is with Donald Trump, I think he said there was a group that approached him. You know, just based on knowing what Trump did to the USFL, I don't want to see him owning a team in the NFL. And if they want to keep that team in Buffalo, they should keep Trump far away because he does not care. And he, you know, with the USFL, he owned the Generals, and then he really made his mark on that league, and he was one of the guys who pushed them towards the disastrous move to the spring, and, you know, which eventually put the league out of business, and he could care less, you know. To him, it's, you know, just a game. Meanwhile, you know, there's guys who make their livelihood on that, and as much as anyone, he killed the USFL. And, you know, I can't picture him keeping that team in Buffalo. If Trump gets a piece of that team, of course, it would probably be a big piece, and a guy like him isn't going to be a silent partner. Then they're going to either move to Toronto, London, or L.A. You know, I just don't see his ego fitting into Buffalo. I mean, you know, they've been playing there over 50 years, and, you know, they do support the team, but it is one of the smaller markets. And, you know, based on the USFL thing with Donald Trump, I just don't see him as being a good owner. And he admitted, Trump said, that he was one of the reasons he pursued the lawsuit, but, you know, the USFL versus the NFL. He was hoping that as a compromise, the NFL would take in the USFL teams, and that would be his kind of backdoor way into the NFL.
Yeah. Well, speaking about the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo News reports the Bills could have a new owner as early as October. According to a high-ranking Bills source, the sale is on a much faster track than fans probably expected. Per reporter Tim Graham, October isn't the most likely completion date for a sale, however. That will be the league meetings in December or next March. The Bills' next owner could, just along the lines that you're talking about, the Bills' next owner could break the team's stadium lease as early as 2020, which is 6 years from now. So this is going to be very interesting, who takes over the Bills, because has been talk about the Bills moving, even while Ralph Wilson was the still the owner. And it probably won't be squashed until the new owner comes out and makes a statement about whether this team is here to stay or we may have to. And this is always a code. We may have to look into the lease that is arranged with the city of Buffalo. So, we have quite a few months to find out, to wait and see who steps up and who's accepted as the new owner, because the NFL just doesn't let anybody in. And even though that I think it's been a little seedy with the Cleveland Browns owner and all that's been going on with him, I don't know how it passed muster with the NFL owners, but as quiet as it's said, he still has a huge legal hurdle to leap over to even stay out of jail, from what I understand. Your thoughts on that?
You know, also, don't forget, Ziggy Wolf, the owner of the Vikings, he's having his legal issues, which
right.
I think for a lot of these guys, you know, litigation is just part of the game for these guys. And, I mean, it happened to the former 49ers owner. But from what I get the impression for the Browns owner, it doesn't look good. But I think he got indicted after he acquired the franchise.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate because ever since, you know, the Browns franchise was resurrected, they just can't catch a break. You know, they really, really can't. It's a good town. I've actually been there. It's a good football town. And, you know, talk about a cursed franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you, Jeff. You know, no matter what some of these teams do, seems like a dark cloud just follows them, and they can't get out of their own way. But they're making strides. Let me put it that way. The Cleveland Browns, they've changed hierarchy and management. From last year to this year, now it's all new management in there, and they're trying to improve their the offense. The defense is pretty stable, and they're trying to improve their offense. Let me back up for a minute here and welcome our other co-host from down in the District of Columbia. Welcome, Black. How you doing, my man?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Black.
Nothing much.
Please save me from any Deshaun Jackson news. I'm in the D.C. area, and you will swear these people have won the Super Bowl already.
Well, I was going to, since we had talked about it earlier, but you jumped on here, and I definitely, because you are down in that area, and you know the crazy buzz that's going on, before I jump back to what we were talking about, give me your thoughts on the Redskins picking up Deshaun Jackson.
I still want to see who's going to go across the middle. Got a bunch of munchkins out there. Who's going to go across the middle and make that tough play when you need it?
Well, they do have the tight end that does that a lot with Jordan Reed.
I'm waiting to see. It all looks good on paper. I've seen this script before down here in D.C. I need to see everything play out on the field.
Okay. All right. We were talking about the Buffalo Bills getting a new owner probably sometime near October or in the near future. Anyway, I don't want to belabor that. Let's talk about this. And I'm going to lose my train of thought here. What was I talking about? Hold on a minute here. Let me bring it back to this.
You tend to go through three-game sweeps to start the season. You tend to lose that train of thought, my friend.
I know what I wanted to talk about. It's still in football. I wanted to talk to Jeff. Jeff, Giants just completed a deal with a former St. Louis Ram, which I think is a pretty damn good pickup. The defensive end, Robert Ayers, they signed him on a 2-year contract. What's your thoughts on that, Jeff?
You know, wasn't he also with Denver?
Yes, he was with Denver.
It looks like a good, solid move, and the Giants haven't been, you know, making these big splash moves, but I don't know. It looks like they're just making good decisions, I hope. And, you know, hopefully it works out on the field for them this year. And this is, you know, it comes down to a lot of times, you know, as a fan, do you have confidence in the GM? And you have to realize even the best GM is never 100%. But Jerry Reese has such a good track record that a lot of things he does, you just say, okay, it should work. And a lot of times it has. You know, he's, you know, the two Super Bowls really, you know, and pretty much I mean, the first one was a lot of players who were already there, but he had a great draft that year. And, you know, but also part of it is free agents. And, you know, Giants are usually conservative when it comes to free agents and that kind of thing. But I don't know. It looks like they're getting the right kind of guys. But, you know, they need luck. Giants depend on getting hot at the right time, you know.
Yeah.
Jerry Reese is quietly signing guys during this free agent. Not a lot of big names, but names that you know. He's building up that depth. I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants made a run this season.
Well, speaking of a team, go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, it's so crazy because, you know, you don't have to dominate. If you make the playoffs, you get hot at the right time, you could win. And I think, you know, say what you want about Eli. I think he's getting towards the end of his career. You don't know how long he's going to go for. You know, I think they want to make another run. And you know, just the one thing, and it just, if Plaxico Burress hadn't popped a cap in his own leg, we'd be talking about a Giants dynasty because they were playing so great that year. They could have won another one. I mean, I know it sounds greedy, but mm-hmm. they, you know, but after that first Super Bowl with Coughlin, the next season they were just dominant. I think they were like 11-1 until Plax blew it, and they unfortunately they didn't have good depth at that position. He was their best receiver. It's not all his fault, but it hurt the chance of the Giant dynasty, you know. But that's why, you know, you can't assume anything, you know. And even if they went 15-1, you can't assume they're going to make the Super Bowl. But that's an oucher. I mean, if they would have got beat on the field by somebody, you know, I could say, okay, they got beat, you know, whatever. But because, you know, your star guy shoots himself in the leg in a nightclub, that's not how you want to ruin a season, you know.
That's true. Let's stay in the NFC East. We talked about the Giants, talked about the Eagles and the Redskins quite naturally signing Deshaun Jackson. But there happens to be another team.
Did I hear you correctly earlier? You have a new man crush and the one Javion Clowney?
I've been talking about my man for how long? How long have I been talking about the Houston Texans should draft this guy number one and go after a quarterback in the second round. Now, let me tell you something. I listened to NFL AM, and Terrell Davis echoed the same words that I was talking about. And before that, last week, I think it was either on Friday or over the weekend with the NFL Access Review, Curtis Conway echoed the exact same words that I was saying. They should take Jadeveon Clowney in the first round, first pick, and go around and pick up a quarterback that's a winner in A.J. McCarron. So, yes, I do have a man crush. I think it would be a hell of a move to get two dynamite players like that on the front line. And like I told Jeff earlier, a lot of these analysts now are saying that these quarterbacks that are nowhere near first-round picks, quite naturally some of them are going to get picked first round. But for the most part, there's so much depth at the quarterback position that there's not that much difference between the so-called top-ranked quarterback, whether you think of Teddy Bridgewater or Bortles or Johnny Manziel or somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo. There's not that much difference between these guys. So if you want to get a quarterback, don't necessarily have to go especially in the first round. So, and the first pick. I'm just saying, and from what I've seen and the speak I've heard from my head coach and my GM, even though they may not have said it, I got to believe unless they get blown over by a huge deal on draft day and trading, getting picks and trading down, Jadeveon Clowney is going to be the number one pick, and then they're going to go after a quarterback, regardless who it is, in the second or third round. I'm just saying. But getting back to what I was talking about, the other team in Texas hasn't been that active, if at all, in free agency market. They signed Brandon Weeden. They signed Henry Melton. And I think they signed Jeremy Mincy, if I'm not mistaken, which from what I'm seeing, they're not big-name players. I don't know if they're going to be able to replace one of them is going to be able to replace DeMarcus Ware on the defensive side. Brandon Weeden as a backup quarterback. That's why I have the resident Dallas Cowboy fan to ask, what is the Dallas Cowboys doing to keep up with the other three teams that are seemingly passing them by or have passed them by in acquiring players and bettering the team? Talk to me, Black.
Well, you wait until, what is it, the June 1st, the next round of cuts? Is it after June 1st?
Okay.
Yeah, you wait until then, and you'll get a proper evaluation of what my boys are doing. We're also putting money away for our draft pick. So talk to me in June when we've done the rest of the cuts, and I'll let you know what's going on.
Okay. Well, they started
there's no rush for these old guys that are out here in free agency right now. There's no rush for these guys.
So you're saying that June 1st cuts, that they're going to be the guys that are younger, and they'll be picking up guys after that because they were less than $2 million under the cap to spend. And after cutting Ware, that money increased to $10 million. So they've increased it by $8 million that they're under the cap. Now, you think that they're going to be more active after June 1st? Or they're going to wait until before that and go to and try to acquire players that they need in the May 8th draft?
Yeah, they're going to get younger through the draft. They're going to get younger, and they'll have enough money to play with after those June 1st cuts. They're not going to spend money on these high-priced guys. You know, it's just not feasible to the plan, especially on the defensive side. And I'm hoping Jerry doesn't get enamored with any whole bunch of offensive guys. If he does, I want that offense to be an offensive lineman that he likes. But the rest of drafting all defense, he's going to make those moves for us right after June 1st to free up some more money. Maybe make a couple of moves in the draft. Maybe trade a couple of draft picks to move up and get somebody he likes. But we're not sweating any free agents right now.
Well, they need defensive line help. They need safety help. I gotta see what they're going to do because I'm real concerned, Black, that you're going to be in a state of depression come the football season, and I hate to see one of my fellow co-hosts in that state with no hope from the beginning of the season to the end of the season.
When you have Romo, there's always hope during the season.
What do you think?
I won't say postseason hope, but during the season. We're going to just have to outscore guys. This is basically going to come down to. We have the offense to do that.
Outscore?
Black,
I got what you said?
Oh, excuse me.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I got a question. Now, we were talking before about Chris Johnson's going to be on the market. I don't know. He looks like the kind of guy who Jerry Jones might want to go after. What do you think of Chris Johnson signing up with the Cowboys?
Well, he's following Jerry Jones on Twitter right now. So that might be one of the after June 1st pickups.
Okay, because he's due to get released, like, any day now, basically, any day now. And I got to believe somebody's going to grab him before June 1st. So I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Any comments on that, Black, or no?
I think he'll be around. There wasn't really a big market for running back, so I think he'll still be around.
Okay.
You know, the Cowboys used to have a guy a little bit like Chris Johnson. They had Felix Jones, Felix the Cat, and that guy just, I think, is he out of the league now? But he did show some promise his first year.
Felix Jones was like Samuel Jackson in that movie Unbreakable. Just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, we got about 13 minutes left in the show. As you guys know, and I'm pretty sure both of you, including myself, have filled out a NCAA bracket, a tournament bracket. I know mine's got blown up, but the participants that are in the Final Four, which is getting played on the 5th, which is Saturday, starting at 6 o'clock. Florida plays Connecticut, and Wisconsin is going to play Kentucky for the chance to go to the big dance, which is probably going to get played, on a Monday, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, Monday night.
Yes, Monday night. All right, let's go this route first. Let's go to the number one seed. No, I'll go this way. Let's go the winner of the West bracket, which is the number two seed, Wisconsin, coming out of the Big Ten, versus the number eight seed, the young, and I wouldn't say dumb, but young guns from the University of Kentucky, coached by oh my God, I can't believe I forgot his name already.
Calipari, my friend. Calipari.
Yeah, yes, John Calipari. I'm sorry. Thanks, Black. Going up against Wisconsin at approximately 9 o'clock on Saturday night. I'm going to go to Black first. Give me your thoughts on those two first before we go to the other bracket, and then Jeff.
Well, that's... still haven't seen Wisconsin play, if you can believe it or not, throughout this whole tournament. But they do have a good coach there, Bo Pelini. Bo Pelini's been there for a while. I gotta think Kentucky gets out of this. They sneak past Wisconsin in a tight game. That Michigan-Kentucky game was probably one of the best games of the tournament. I think Kentucky's going to squeeze this one out. I think the amount of talent Kentucky has on this side is going to work for them in this game.
Jeff.
But I won't sleep on that the guy from Wisconsin I've been hearing about. Kaminsky. He's a very good player.
Is he a big man, small man?
He's a big man, but with range I'm hearing. I won't sleep on that guy. I haven't seen him play yet, but I've been hearing good things about him.
Okay. Jeff.
Yeah, Wisconsin has I saw some of one of the game they're playing great, but I think at this point in the tournament, Calipari's experience in the big games might make the difference for Kentucky. So if I had to pick one, it'd be by a slim margin, Kentucky.
Okay. Well, quite naturally, the Final Four, you got to have someone on the other side of the bracket to come out of that to get to the final game. You got number seven, Connecticut. And it's pretty crazy here. You got number seven seed and number eight seed. that finished up in two brackets. And then you got a number two seed and a number one seed, Florida, which is going to be playing Connecticut at the early game at 6 o'clock. If I'm not mistaken, I think this is being played in Madison Square Garden. And if I'm not mistaken, and I would think that Kentucky would have, Connecticut would have a considerable advantage playing in Florida. But Florida is it's an extremely good team, coached by a hell of a coach, Billy Donovan. But Ollie, coaching Connecticut, is no slouch either. I'm going to go to Black first, and then Jeff. Florida, Connecticut.
Hey, look, my hat's off to Kevin Ollie. Done a wonderful job there with Connecticut. Another one of the rare black coaches that made the Final Four, but Connecticut just shoots entirely too many bricks for me to back them in any semifinal game going to a championship.
Okay.
I still got a role with my man Dorian Finney-Smith, who I interviewed when he was in the Capital Classic in D.C. He's on the floor tomorrow. I got to go with Billy Donovan and those Florida boys, man. They look real strong. They look real strong.
Jeff.
I think, again, the more experienced coach is Donovan. I mean, he's got rings, so I think I would lean towards Florida. But I'll tell you, Connecticut's a good story. Doing so well after Jim Calhoun's retirement. But I think he still stayed on friendly terms with the coach, and I guess, it never became an issue. I guess they had a good relationship, and, hey, if it works, great, because Calhoun was an excellent coach.
Yeah, I'm real interested to – I don't normally watch basketball, but I may sit down and try to watch at least one –
You missed the Michigan and Kentucky game?
Yes, I'm not a real big basketball watcher. I have a hard time sitting down and spending the time to watch a basketball game. I can watch baseball, believe it or not. I can watch baseball all day, along with football. Basketball, for some reason, I like the game of basketball. I like my team, the Knicks. But for me to sit down and watch I lose interest in watching the basketball game very quickly. So it is what it is. Maybe I'm getting old and feeble in my 60th year, soon to be. So we'll see what happens. All right, let's go to the state of boxing, okay? Since our guest hasn't shown up here, which is fine. I see that Adrian Broner is to face Molina on the money undercard. Black, you're a boxing aficionado. Your thoughts, Adrian Broner, Molina. I can't. Why am I? I get brain locked today. Anyway, Molina against Adrian Broner on May 3rd.
I think Broner has an easy time there. I rather would have saw Broner and Khan to another Broner Medina rematch, but I think Broner has a good time. I don't think Floyd would have a card where Broner would struggle, especially on his May Day. Khan has a fight on that card. I understand Broner has a fight on that card. I believe it's two other guys also has a fight on that card. So I got Broner getting himself back together and making this fight a good one. He'll bounce back. But I need Broner to step the competition up.
Yeah, Amir Khan is fighting Luis Collazo in the co-feature on that night. Jeff.
Those two guys should have been paired up.
Khan
and Broner. Those two guys should have been paired up, Khan and Broner.
Well, before I go to Jeff, tell me why that didn't happen. What was the reason behind that?
Well, the first was the reason that Floyd put out who was supposed to be the next point, either Khan or Madonna. So you had that whole thing going on. Then they let Madonna's camp know maybe, what, 3-4 months to go? Finally let him know that, yeah, you have to prepare for me now. And that just left Khan hanging in the wind.
Okay. Jeff.
I'm not really up on boxing. I watched a lot growing up, but I'm not really up on the contemporary fighters. But I did want to share, I was thinking about this earlier this week. I don't know if you guys knew that they made a musical of the movie Rocky, and it's playing on Broadway. Have you guys heard about that?
What's that again?
I haven't heard about it.
That there's now a musical version of the movie Rocky on Broadway.
No, I did not know that.
And as bizarre as it sounds, it's supposed to be getting good reviews.
Okay. No, I did not know that. I can't imagine Rocky at the musical, but hey, if it's if you show it, they will come. Let me put it that way. I don't know what to say about that. It is what it is. Pacquiao Bradley. Your thoughts, Pacquiao?
I'm waiting for that. I'm waiting. What is that, in 2 weeks? That's next weekend, isn't it?
That is, will take place on April 12th.
I can't wait for that one. That should be a good one. That definitely should be a good one. I want to see how Pacquiao redeems himself, especially after that first fight with Bradley. He says he's coming in much lighter, much quicker, much stronger. Pacquiao, I mean, Bradley, he's also saying that he needs this one to maintain his strength in boxing, so I definitely want to see this match. This one can go either way, but I'm going to give the slight edge to Bradley right now.
Well, you know that, before I go to Jeff, you know that he won it last time they fought. And two of the judges that were in that fight has since left judging, C.J. Ross and Dwayne Ford. So both of them are no longer in the judging business.
And that's what I'm afraid of. I was talking to my guy earlier today. I was like, it could be a hell of a fight, but it's ultimately going to come down to the scoring. And these judges, these past couple of fights have not been living up what they're supposed to be doing in that ring. So I want to see a good fight scored by a cousin.
Yeah, that's going to be on HBO pay-per-view. I think I got a link that you provided me, Black, that would help me on that day. I'm not going to go any further than that, but I would be taking that fight in. Jeff, your thoughts?
I have seen Pacquiao fight. He, needless to say, very impressive. But I think he's trying to get on there in years. And he's moved up so many times in weight class. I mean, the weight classes, there's so many of them now. Is he at the end of his prime or maybe past his prime?
Well, supposedly, either his last fight or the last two fights, he's made a resurgent. So we'll have to see if he's is on the comeback trail or that was just a fluke or whatever. You may have to ask Black about that. What's your thoughts about him, Black?
Yeah, he's he's training with Freddie Roach now. He's looking good, but he's getting closer to the end. He's getting closer to the end, but he's still looking good. He's still looking sharp. So, but this Bradley, he's a tough nosed fighter, so it's gonna be tough.
All right, one more thing before we get out of here, I want to ask you about Black. Is this Peter Kit Chocolate Quinnen, who's going to be fighting Lucas Konecki in April 19th.
Yeah, that's on the Bernard Hopkins card down here in D.C.
Okay. What's your thoughts on him?
Man, watch him. Watch him. Kid Chocolate. Watch him. That's definitely worth watching.
Okay. Well, we come to the end of the show. I want to say thank you to my two co-hosts, and I'm going to go around the horn to give them a chance to give their parting shots before we get out of here. I'm going to Jeff first, then Black, and then I'll do the honors of getting out of here. Jeff.
Well, I hate to be the one to have the bad news, but I saw that Rosie Greer is being sued for allegedly exposing himself to a neighbor. And for those not familiar, I mean, Rosie Greer was a great football player way back for the Giants and for the Los Angeles Rams, and mm-hmm. one of the first football players to transition into acting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, a minister, a philanthropist. And when I heard that, I was almost heartbroken. So, like I said, it's just an accusation. But he is 81 years old, and he played the game a long time ago. I hope he doesn't have dementia. So hopefully it's not true, because everybody loves Rosie.
Talk to me, Black.
All right, I got two parting shots, and then I got something for the joke. My first parting shot. I like how the host of the show tonight conveniently did not give any love to the Washington Nationals as they swept the New York Mets to open the season 3-3. Thank you, host. Second off, I got to give a big shout-out to my boys down in the phone booth, the Washington Wizards, clinching the playoff spot. First time since, I believe, 08 or 09. Way to do it, guys. Gortat was an excellent pickup. Randy Whitman, the end of playoffs. Hopefully we can make a little bit of noise. Not expecting too much, but I'm happy they're there. Jeff, what's going on with WrestleMania 30? Anything I should tune in for?
Oh, shoot. You know, I haven't really been following. I was just thinking about it, but I don't remember anything noteworthy. But the thing is, they pull out all the stops for the WrestleMania. You know, if the belt's going to change hands, it's usually on that. And, you know, back in the 90s when I kind of lost interest in boxing, part of it was the boxing pay-per-views were frequently duds. Say what you want about wrestling, those pay-per-views were usually really good. You know, wrestling, it is what it is. But, yeah, usually they pull out all the stops for the WrestleMania. They don't hold anything back.
I see they still keeping my man, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, out of the Hall of Fame. I don't know what's going on with that.
That is odd. But the thing is, the WWE Hall of Fame is a scam, because to be inducted, you have to let McMahon own the rights to your name.
Wow.
That's
what?
Why the Honky Tonk, yes. Well, you think McMahon would honor you for free without strings attached? That's why the Honky Tonk Man is not in there, because he still makes a few bucks, you know, part-time wrestling in the independent promotions on the weekend, and he wants to be able to use his real name. So, and that's part of my issue with the WWE Hall of Fame. And also, I mean, I know it was symbolic, but there's guys in there like Vern Gagne. He never worked in the WWF. You know, then it was WWF. I mean, in fact, McMahon put him out of business, you know?
Drew Carey's in there?
They got Johnny Rods in there. I mean, Johnny Rods was a jobber, but he used to drive around McMahon. So he's in there. So it's not a real Hall of Fame. It's nice, but it's not a real Hall of Fame.
Okay. All right. My parting shot and my thing that I want to add, I'm going to definitely watch this. DeSean Jackson, this is coming from ProFootballTalk.com, an article here posted by Michael David Smith. DeSean Jackson abruptly backed out of an interview on the Dan Patrick Show this morning, but Jackson does plan to get his side of everything that has transpired in the last week to the public. Jackson has instead taped an interview with Stephen A. Smith of ESPN, according to Jeff McClain of the Philadelphia Inquirer. A A Jackson spokesperson told McClain that the interview will clear up everything, in quotes, and will air Friday. Jackson issued a statement vehemently denying that he is in the gang after NewJersey.com published a story about his supposed gang ties shortly before the Eagles cut him. But other than that, Jackson has been mostly quiet about the circumstances that led to him getting cut by Philadelphia and ending up in Washington. Perhaps by the end of the day on Friday, we'll have a better idea of what went wrong for Jackson with the Eagles. So sometime on Friday, I look at your airtime or pay attention to ESPN to find out if you're interested in this interview with the Stephen A. Smith and DeSean Jackson to see if he will, in quotation marks, clear everything up. With that being said, I want to thank Black and Jeff for joining me tonight, and we had a nice, healthy conversation here. Tune in next week, same time, same bat channel. Jeff, Black, and myself will also always be here, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow will be 7 p.m. will be the No Chaser Show with my esteemed host, Mac Williams. We'll be back live again. I'll be the co-host. I'll also be hosting this Saturday because, if I'm not mistaken, Victor has some obligations that he has to take care of on Saturday, and I'll be hosting that show, FSP show, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Saturday. And then also, as always, on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time will be the Master Plan, where I'll ride solo, and I'll be talking about news and notes and things that have been happening up until 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday. With that being said, it's been a pleasure as always. Be safe, people. Be safe, guys. And we will talk to each other in the near future. See ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping